Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members, for the questions. Now, let me start off with the questions from Honorable Professor. Let me agree with you that the money that has been put into the Department of Higher Education goes in no way to address the challenges that universities face. And so when we say there's been an increase, it's a transfer that has gone to basically cover the gap that the university, and I agree with you fully, that it does not reflect an increase in what universities get. Now, our work that Honorable Killian is referring to assessed that particular aspect, and we demonstrated very clearly that over time, the share of government's contribution to the total cost of education in universities had been declining. Now, both in terms of the rate at which it was growing and also in terms of catching up with the pressures exerted by the numbers of students that are now qualifying for university education, and also the number of learners or students that are coming from poorer backgrounds that need to be subsidized. So if that grant is not growing to keep up with that demand on its own, and then you then add the other costs that are associated with running a university, you have a problem. And so that pressure still exists, and I'm taking it as a given. So when I look at these numbers, I'm taking it as if universities have not received any changes in terms of what they were requesting. That is a fact. The point is that you had to respond to a pressure that was exerted by students, and you had to say, no, okay, let's do that. So it does not change anything in terms of what is actually going to universities. So I agree with you that and we probably could have mentioned it in the presentation that this is actually the case. Now, the issue of the cost of compensation of employees and universities, I agree with you that that does not have anything to do with universities. In fact, in the morning, I had requested that actually be corrected. So I agree that something did not get done there. Now, the sitters and the comparison with the sitters, the appropriateness of that, probably is based on some naughty idea that in our own conversations, we look at these things and we say, but there's a lot of money that is here that could actually be shifted to here if we realign what we want to do. So that's put there, but it was based on some conversations that we were having. And I do agree with you that the source of the money is not the same. But probably ultimately it's all still the same taxpayers that are paying it. So in one way or another, it's a conversation that we were having. To demonstrate what resources are available and where. Now the questions from Honorable Kekan, it's a very important question, especially in the context of what is happening. The demands for university education or on university education, and the commitments on post-school education and the TVETs. Now, one of the biggest challenges around these programs, let me put it that way for lack of a better word, was that there was a very significant gap in terms of the norms and standards of what you actually are expecting out of these TVET colleges. What are the norms and standards that can be applied across to indicate that if you are not performing to this level, then you are actually not meeting the standards, and we have every right to intervene. So when you, in the absence of those norms and standards, uniform, I would say that at the minimum, these are the expectations. Then you would be able to come back and say, given this and these targets that we have set, because I'm not sure what the basis for the targets that one looks at would be if you do not know what the expected standards of the level of service that you're delivering is supposed to be. So there is a question mark in terms of how do I respond to that question that says, because all I'm hearing from you is that what is the appropriate mix that you will have for university versus TVET colleges if you have to meet the targets that you have set for skills development and employment creation. It's up there. It requires a little bit more work. And I can't actually give a direct answer onto that because at the moment we can't compare. The TVET colleges, some of them were sitting with municipalities, some of them were sitting with provinces, so it's a whole range of them. And one has to, first of all, understand what it is that they are doing at their different levels and where they sit. The questions from Honorable Killian, I do understand that we took a different approach. I think we took a different approach with some of these issues because there is now that commission that has been established. Most of the work that we were talking about last year, part of it was even the year before, that preceded the Fees Must Fall campaign. When we were discussing, because I could actually have put in even issues around the capacity of the department itself, because we can talk about this COE story and say, okay, the department is doing okay in terms of this, but the bottom line is those capacity challenges that the department has been highlighting still exist, because taking over that function was not an easy, that you can just say you're taking over such a big function and then you still stay with the same staff and expect to be able to do what you're supposed to do. So those are issues that we have left, either because of some task team that is still doing some work around that, or we have left because we would like to engage with the Presidential Commission that is looking at this matter going forward. So I hope, Chairperson, I've responded sufficiently to the questions that have been asked.
Honourable members, follow-up questions? You are satisfied, happy with the responses? Now, I'll ask the department to also add or top up on the clarities that have been asked by the honourable members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Tien Stradu, CFO for the department. I would just like to comment on one or two things, and I think tomorrow when we present the APPM budget we can go into more detail. But first of all, I think the function shift itself had a major impact on the kind of analysis that was done by the Fiscal and Financial and Fiscal Commission, as many of the, let's call it then, abnormal increases or shifts in the various percentages are as a result of the function shift. If we can take compensation of employees as an example, that one specific slide, prior to 2015-16, it is low, it's about 3% if I remember the slide correctly, and then it jumps to 8%. But the difference is that prior to 2015-16, all the salaries for the TVET system as well as the CETs were part of the conditional grant, which was a transfer. So it was reflected as a transfer and not as compensation of employees. Now suddenly you have that shift, and you see that the same situation is under transfer payments, you suddenly see a decline. It's not that subsidies declined at all, but that money went to compensation of employees. So it was just that correction of the spending item, if we can call it that way. In terms of I think one of the big difficulties for the department at this moment, and I think for the FFC even as well, is that due to the function shift, we have quite a number of inaccuracies in the data. And that creates a serious problem. I can indicate to you already at this point in time that for 2015-16, we will close with a much higher surplus than ever in the past, simply because of the inaccurate data that we inherited from provinces. If I can explain, for example, if you take the TVET college system where we now have all that staff as employees and we pay compensation of employees, the amount that we've set aside per college to fund compensation of employees is actually much larger than the actual amount required. So we've beefed up compensation of employees to ensure that we are able to pay all the salaries. And during 2016-17, and hopefully already by the adjusted estimates period, we will correct that difference between the amount that we reserve for compensation of employees on the one side and which we pay out as subsidies on the other side. So I think for 2015-16 outcome, as well as partly 2016-17, we may still see some distortions in some of the numbers as we try to correct the data and put that money at the correct place where it is supposed to be. Otherwise, Chair, I think also certainly, and we will talk about that tomorrow as well, the key risk would be what is the impact of the 0% fee increase. We've seen the correction in the allocations over the MTF to correct the 2016 academic year and to carry through thereof. But what's going to happen in 2017? What's going to happen thereafter? And the reality that we have is that whatever happens will have to come from the fiscus. We cannot reprioritize those kinds of amounts within the budget. The only other alternative is that we have a serious change in legislation to say that part of the skills levy must fund the university system or the TVET system. But that will have a debate on its own. That will need a serious change in legislation. It will not be something that you can fix in 6 months or a year's time. Chair, I think that is comments at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Mbata.
Good morning. I'm not going to be asking any question in relation to the presentation specifically, but I've got a specific interest. In your view, how much can it take financially to a free higher education in South Africa? Developing societies have offered free higher education, not for the poor, for everybody.
Where?
You must read.
Where?
Everywhere.
Read where?
No, of course, this platform
give us
for, for sharing of information. So you can't refer us back to the library.
Okay,
no, that's
fine.
Over to you, Mr. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, Ms. Killian, then Mr. Gebran.
Chair, I'm happy for the clarification with regards to the increase in compensation of employees, because that is usually a very disconcerting trend, because that obviously consumes funding on operational expenditure. It's not as though you don't want people to have decent salaries, but it is the question of if the budget must cover specific investment in other infrastructure, etc., then it becomes a serious challenge. So I'm happy for that clarification, that because of the migration, you know, there's been a steep increase, etc. But I think what Mr. Trudeau also said was the same concern that we have, and that is if we look at the outer years in the medium term, then, you know, last year we already discussed it, and I hear Honourable Mbata coming in with a very interesting question. I can recall, and I've got a copy of the document here, the cost of free higher education. There was a calculation done, in fact. There was such an investigation. And I think if he is serious, he will also realize that we're not a developed economy, but we are a developing economy. And therefore, we cannot compare ourselves to Sweden and all those, Finland and all of those countries. But the fact is, if we look, it is a matter of very serious concern. And Mr. Trudeau made it very abundantly clear. There is no way that it can be reprioritized. We will need additional funding from the fiscus. And I know everybody else wants to have additional funding from the fiscus, the Minister of Health, the Minister of all the ministers. But in this case, we will have to make out a very strong argument, because in the end, if we want to have a decline on social expenditure for people in need, we have to give them the means to earn a living, a decent living. And you can only do that if you help them through the primary, secondary and tertiary education system. So actually, it's not a question, it's just comment on what Mr. Trudeau said, and I'm happy that the department expressed that view. And I'm happy that the Fiscal Commission is present to hear what the committee also feels about it.
I want us to end this discussion on the presentation by the FFC, but then I also want you to help me that we finish by 10 o'clock. We left with, because the other must be given at least 45 minutes, the other presentation. So I'll appreciate that whoever comes, you know, on the floor, please, you become very short and to the point. We have time constraints. We must still listen to AXA presentation. Thank you very much. Honorable Member Kekana, to be followed by Honorable Member Kasim.
On the issue of TVET, I know that you're saying that a lot of work has to be done, and I accept that. But I'm saying, while you're doing that work of distributing resources in proportion to the needs of TVET and university, the other thing that you need to do, you know, you mentioned something very important about local government, that local government was running their own, provinces were running their own. Please don't remove them from factory floor. Just like when health tried to move the training of nurses from colleges who were based on the premises of hospitals and take them to university. I mean, TVETs are by their nature practical. So please, when you centralize the migration, we can understand, don't move them from local, the actual college itself or the training itself. Let it be not far from local government. It must be there at the factory floor where things are happening, so that you retain the practical part. The bulk of the training should be done practically. That is the request.
Honourable Member Kasim?
Chairperson, I'm going to be very brief. Chair, my question is around the amounts with the function shift and the TVET colleges. And Mr. Trudeau says that, you know, there was more money put aside, for example, for compensation of employees than what the demand required. That's fine. But my question really is around infrastructure in the TVET college sector. There isn't any money, not a cent, made available through the department for infrastructure for TVET colleges, unlike, for example, universities where there are grants that are made available to previously disadvantaged institutions in the main. And this is a concern, Chairperson, because these TVET colleges are not modernized. They for a while now, many of them have not received any funding for infrastructure. There were only very few provinces that did provide assistance in infrastructure, not all of them, if I may add. So I just wanted to know if there was money that was over budgeted, so to speak, by the department, is it possible for that to be redirected to assist colleges with infrastructure, and what are actually the plans to deal with this problem both in the short, medium and long terms? For TVET colleges, they cannot afford to build new lecture venues. There's hardly any residences when you look at these colleges as well, to get the type of equipment that is needed going forward.
Well, Honourable Member Kasim's question, I think, would be more relevant tomorrow. No, I just said they must respond, you know, top up the responses by FFC, but are you ready to respond?
Yeah,
very quick. That's fine. Okay, then. Okay, we will then open for responses. Let's start with Mr. Kumalo.
I think there's just one question that I need to respond to from Honorable Mbatha. It's a very complicated question that you're asking, but the numbers, I mean, when we did some calculations back of the envelope, you'd probably need in excess of 50 billion rand. Now, the fiscus currently and in the near future is very unlikely to generate that much and sustain it. Now, we must understand that you can look at it and calculate it today, but then it has to be linked with a number of other programs that government runs in the form of what we call the social wage. Because otherwise you will tax everybody to death in order to be able to sustain that, because as more and more young people qualify and get into university, if you look at the numbers, children that are now can access a school, your school education sector, your enrollment rate exceeds your school age population. That means all kids that are supposed to be in school are at school, and then there are those that are actually repeating or that started school late, they are actually there. Now, all of those, given certain circumstances and we improve our education system, will also now flood the higher education system. And so you have to calculate that over a period of time. You're almost like looking at actuarial numbers on both sides. And then you will say, do you want to be taxed as the Swedish are taxed? Because you can say they give free education, or Finland, they give free education. Look at the tax rates and compare. Mm-hmm. And then we will see whether we can actually agree that this is where we want to go. I would say that one has to proceed with that with a significant amount of caution. Most developing countries that have free education, I'll put it in brackets, because they've got scholarship funds or loan systems that people, when they get out of the system, they must pay back. Where it breaks down in a country like, and I'll give you the example of an economy that cannot generate the employment, and then everybody that must get employed gets to emigrate, and they're educated, yes, they leave, they go and work elsewhere, they are no longer going to pay back, and the thing will collapse on its own. So you've got to think about all of these combinations and more seriously. So it's more involved than just making a pronouncement to say free education for all. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and there are a lot of lessons, both from Africa and from overseas, that one can also draw from to see whether the approach should be as simple as that. Thank you.
Honourable Member Mbata, are you ready to pay very high tax?
Yes, Chair.
No, that's fine.
Chairperson, you can start somewhere now.
No, that's fine. That's okay. It's good that we get this information, and harsh reality is, you know, if you pay, then you've got to, you know, there's a way in which you must accumulate this money for the free education and, you know, for all. Free education for all is. Okay. No, that's fine. Shall we then allow Mr. Trudeau?
Thank you, Jay. First of all, in terms of the possible saving that we will have, there are unfortunately very strict rules by Treasury in terms of rollovers. But we agreed in the department already with the accounting officer that we will apply for a rollover. Now, whether that will directly go for infrastructure, it's not certain at this point in time. However, we agreed also to say that the money must go to the TVET sector. We also have a lot of operational risks on the side of some TVET colleges, so we might even use that money at this point in time for normal operations as well. And then also on infrastructure, there is a slide that will talk about budget pressures in tomorrow's presentation. You will see in that slide is reference to infrastructure development. And this is something that we've been raising with the National Treasury over the past 2-3 years already. We did provide additional bids for that because exactly what you are saying, we have a concern that there is no attention to infrastructure in the TVET sector as there is in the university sector, where there's no dedicated grant for that. The challenge would, however, be to ensure that there is also a proper policy and process put in place so that whatever funds are allocated for infrastructure is actually supported by specific and detailed information in the sector itself. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Mr. Kumalo, what would be your recommendation for your TVET sector budget and the community community colleges budget after your analysis?
After our analysis, I would say that there's not yet a very clear line of action. I understand the question around the infrastructure part, but we're all aware that in the past, before the function was shifted, there was a significant conditional grant that was actually set aside for these. Unfortunately, or otherwise, the spending around that infrastructure grant was very slow. So there were some lost opportunities around that. So from where we sit, we would like, I can't actually make a recommendation now because there's some work that our team together with DHET are involved in terms of looking at what the appropriate funding arrangements for these are. Now, we started off by saying, can we talk about the norms and standards that we can say at the minimum, this is what we are expecting from each of these institutions. Then we'll be able to say, no, using that as a benchmark, this is what must happen. So instead, I would rather not preempt the conversations that are taking place at that technical level, Honorable Chair.
No, that's fine. Thank you very much. It does look like we've come to the end of our engagement with FFC, and I really would like to thank you on behalf of... I would like to, on behalf of the committee, thank you so much for the quality work done on this presentation and the presentation itself, we now have the information and it will be for good use by the members, honorable members. Thank you very much. And let's keep up this good working relationship. I was just asking myself whether we should always wait for maybe after 6 months. Can we meet again in 6 months' time so that you give us the analysis again? You know, that will make us to be relevant all the way until the end of the financial year. Thank you very much. We really appreciate this. Now, if you have time, you can sit and listen to the AXA presentation, but you are free to leave if you've got other matters maybe that need your attention. We will now move over to the AXA presentation. And then I would like to call upon the All right. Who is going to lead us in the presentation?
Miss
Ngao. Miss Ngao. Yes. How come you know Mr. Trudeau and I don't know? Okay, no, that's fine. Miss Ngao, over to you, Ma.
Thank you very much. Honorable members,
let's listen carefully, and then we will then come in terms of clarity-seeking questions. Also, this presentation is aimed at enlightening us on what is happening and those challenges that are there, and enabling us to be at the end come up with relevant and practical recommendations for the department. Thank you very much. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Chair, it's always a pleasure to come to Parliament and share the information that we have from the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa. And we really appreciate this opportunity that the members create for us to come and engage. Chair, my name is May Singao. I'm the business executive in the Office of the Auditor General. Next to me to my left is Joshua Baganzi. Joshua is the senior manager responsible for the DHET portfolio. The members might know Michelle Pillay, who used to come to the committee. Joshua is now representing Michelle Pillay. Michelle has moved on to other avenues, and Joshua will be walking this journey with the members henceforth. As the chair has indicated, the purpose of today's briefing is just to take you through the findings that we identified as we reviewed the draft APP of the department and the entities for 2016-17. And I must indicate that there has been drastic improvement in terms of the usefulness of the indicators that have been set by the departments and the entities. Where we did not have any findings, we did not brief the portfolio committee because it would be wasting time. However, the findings that we have specifically for the department, we feel that it's something that we need to share with the committee. It's not something that is very significant. However, we feel that the committee needs to be aware of these issues that are coming forth. We looked at the APPs for the CETAs and for other entities, but not for TVETs and the universities. So the APPs for the TVETs and the universities, we look at them when we audit these universities for 2016-17, which will be in the following year. So the briefing is mainly with regard to the department's APP for 2016-17 and those of the CETAs, so to speak. And can I then, with that, request Joshua to take us through the findings relating to those APPs. Josh.
Thank you, Macy, and good morning once again, honorable members. I'll start off from where Macy has ended and perhaps go to key committee considerations when you're reviewing the APP. I think these are the kind of questions that you ask when you're looking at the APP of these particular entities. So I think the first question to ask is, does the APP align with the midterm strategic framework? Are the indicators relevant and complete? Is there a logical link between the objectives and the indicators and targets as well? Then you ask about, are the targets within the APP or the particular entity realistic? Meaning, do they meet the SMART criteria? Are they specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound? And after that, you also ask the question that does the entity have the necessary resources, be it human resource or financial, to be able to achieve these targets that are included in the APP? I think the other question to ask is, how can the APP be achieved? There needs to be people who are going to drive to achieve these particular targets. Do they have enough control or monitoring mechanisms in the sense of performance management to ensure that every individual's performance contract within the entity linked to the APP or the strategic plan of that particular entity? And then how do you go on a going process on a quarterly basis? How do you monitor progress against achieving of all these entities? Then annually you have to review whether you've achieved what you set out in the first instance, whether you've achieved the targets that you set up to achieve. And then if you didn't achieve, then you need to go start the entire process again, review and track and say, maybe I was so ambitious, some of these targets are not possible for me to achieve given my budget constraints or human resource constraints. So I think that's what this particular slide is all about. And then the next slide is basically explaining our review process of the draft APP for 2016-17, what we did. First, we reviewed the process that the department followed in compiling and preparing the strategic plan. We assessed the measurability, relevance of the final indicators and targets for the selected programs. And then once we finished assessing those APPs for the department and the entities, we came up with findings which we included in our interim management reports. And those relevant findings, departments and the entities were able to correct and include them and adjust the APPs. But I think maybe to say that these findings were just, they just formed part of the interim management report for 2015-16, but we won't be able to report because the entities have been able to adjust the 16-17 based on our reviews of these particular things. I think the next slide talks about the criteria that we use to assess the draft APPs that were submitted to us. There are basically two criteria where we say we look at the measurability of the indicators and targets, and we look at the relevance of the targets and indicators. When we look at measurability of indicators, basically the two components, two aspects that we look at. We look at that, are the indicators that are included in the APP well-defined? Are the definitions of the indicators not ambiguous? Is the data, are we able to collect the data that forms those indicators? Are we able to, when we say verifiable, are we able to get supporting documents for those particular indicators? And then when you say measurability of targets, or are they specific and time-bound, we're saying, is the required performance of those particular targets specified? And is there a timeline when they're going to achieve those particular targets? And the relevance of indicators, basically, we are alluding to the fact that indicators and targets are relevant to the mandate and realization of the strategic goals and objectives of that particular entity. I think the next slides, or the next two slides, basically what the FFC has just finished. We're just comparing the budgets of 16 and 17 for the department specifically, not all entities, but you can see that there's been a substantial increase coming from, in terms of real growth, like 160%, like the FFC has said, because of the functions shift. So that's basically the major thing that stands out from the previous years. The next graph is also just a breakdown in terms of classification, how the different classification of expenditure is split between transfer payments, current payments, and payments for capital assets. Okay, and I think The next slide is basically talks about the findings that emanated from our review of the department's APP. Like Macy said, there has been a significant improvement for the department specifically, and in our review, we didn't pick up any significant finding when it relates to usefulness or the SMART principle. I think we reviewed all the indicators and targets were SMART, but I think maybe the one thing that I need to bring out to the members is this year in the department's APP, they somehow split the indicators and targets in two categories and say these are the key indicators and targets that we 100% under our own control, and then those indicators where they dependent on other entities. Say for example, some indicators, say for example, university enrollments, there is not 100 under their control, they reliant on the universities to submit those particular figures. But so the way they did that is to make sure that they're able to monitor exactly how much, which is 100% in their control and which is solely under dependence with other entities. So those other indicators, we didn't look at that, but we still under consultation with our technical department how we can go about that. And then the next slide is basically detailing entities within the DHEAD portfolio where we had findings. And majority of the findings basically came from these particular entities. We've got CHITA, LGCITA, SACITA, Services CITA, EWCITA, NASFAS, and SAQUA. With the findings from SAQUA specifically, here is just there were five objectives that were tested, but there were two findings regarding consistency. And perhaps as an example, is they were not consistent in terms of the description of the targets and indicators per the strategic plan and the APP, so there were discrepancies between those particular two documents. So that's why we reported here. But SAQUA has agreed through our report in the interim management report that they will be able to adjust their APP. Under well-defined, we also had two indicators. We had CHITA and NASFAS, and basically, under well-defined is because every entity and departments, they are required by National Treasury to have a technical indicator description. And what we found that most of, for CHITA and NASFAS, their technical indicator descriptions did not define clearly the particular indicators on how they're going to achieve those particular indicators and targets that are included in the APP. It's still the same for NASFAS in terms of verifiability. And then I think for the rest of the CITAs and all the other entities, the issue that emanated from here is regarding that targets are not specific. In terms of here, why we're saying they're not specific, especially for the CITAs, is we could not pick up a link between all CITAs have got a sector skills plan and they've got an APP, but we could not get that particular link between the sector skills plan and the annual performance plan on how they're going to achieve those particular targets. So most of these findings on the CITAs or targets not being specific was as a result of there being no direct link between the sector skills plan and how the CITAs plan to address the scarce priority and scarce skills within those APP. I think, and then NASFAS and SAQUA as well, we also had like 50% and 48% of the APP not being measurable. Yeah, I think that's basically, Chairperson, in a nutshell, our presentation. So not all the entities, we didn't have findings on all the entities within the DHEAD portfolio, just those specific ones that I put on the slide.
Chair, if I may just emphasize as well that most of these entities were in the process of correcting their APP, so we haven't had a chance to review what they have corrected. So we hence we have these findings here. So once we have verified them, and the indication, we're indicating the percentage deviation, and the reason being, in terms of our criteria, when we report, if there is a deviation that is above 20%, for example, then we will report that in the audit report. So it's just an indication. However, most of the entities are in the process of correcting, and we hope that they will all be corrected and it will not be necessary for us to report these findings. Thank you, Chair.
I will then allow the honourable members to reflect and raise clarity-seeking questions. Thank you very much, honourable member Kasim, honourable member Bozoli, honourable member Killian, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question I have, Chair, if we look at the specificness of targets.
Yes.
There are two CETAs there, Chairperson, where over 90% of targets are not specific, 94% and 100%, which I find mind-boggling. How can 100% of all your targets not be specific? That is quite a feat in itself. My question really is, and I don't know who can respond to this. I'm not sure it falls under the purview of the AG's office. But is there any, because some of these CETAs are serial offenders. It's not the first time. For example, the LG CETA is an offender. So it's the same can be said about SUS CETA, which was under administration. Same can be said about the services CETA, etc. Is there any way to... I'm not sure, is it a capacity issue? Do they have the right skills in developing these reports and setting these targets? And perhaps the department can assist here as well. Because once your targets are not properly drafted, Chairperson, for your APP, your entire year is at risk. You have now really jeopardized your performance and the work that you are going to do because you're not guided by year specific targets. And you can then just, you know, do whatever vague type of initiatives that you're going to do without actually meeting anything specific for taxpayers. So that's the first question, Chairperson, that I have to ask. The second is with regards to NASFAS. Now, NASFAS, Chair, it seems to me, do not know how to compile proper reports. You'll recall this committee had a serious problem with the annual report, where it was just a copy and paste job. Now, you know, they are offenders of, you know, under almost every category. You know, if you look at indicators not verifiable, indicators not well defined, targets not measurable, targets not specific. And this is a serious public interest entity that is currently front and center within our public discourse and within the crisis that is facing South Africa. And therefore, the credibility of NASFAS has the potential, or let me say, questions around the credibility of NASFAS if it cannot even produce an APP that is well drafted with proper targets. Those questions are very dangerous for our universities. They are very dangerous with the impact that can have when people are already agitated and frustrated, when you have certain people that are trying to create havoc on campuses for their own agendas as well. It gives them ammunition to do so. And this is a serious problem, Chairperson, that must not be taken lightly by the department. And it requires urgent intervention so that this can be corrected without wasting any more time. Because I tell you now, there are people out there in an election year that want to cause havoc on our universities. We saw it at Wits University yesterday. And we cannot afford to have the legitimacy of NASFAS in question at this critical time.
Thank you for your question. Honourable Member Professor Bozoli.
Thank you, Chair. The department seems to know how to devise targets, and it's fairly good at meeting those targets. But the rest of the entities don't even know how to set a target for themselves. They don't even know how to set a target, let alone manage an entity. I want to know whether this is a sign of general failure in government, and I would like, my question to the Auditor General is, how many other countries in the world have to have the Auditor General overseeing your targets so that you will rewrite them so that they will become proper targets? Is this nannying operation a symptom of failure in government and in a way a misuse of Auditor General resources because of failure in government? So anyway, the question is, where else in the world is this kind of nannying required, because it does indicate a really shocking failure of governance in these institutions.
Thank you, Professor. Honourable Member Killian. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I just wanted to say I share the concern with regards to NSFAS. I think it is crucial if we look at it, and I would like to ask the Auditor General's office what has given rise, because if we look at the performance of NSFAS last year, was there a sort of a decline in their ability to manage their own affairs? Was there any instability in the leadership ranks? What is at the root of this, what appears to be a regression? If there is any comment from them or from the department, because more money is being put forward so that more students could benefit. But if the entity that is responsible for managing that process is not in a position to do so within the set guidelines and Treasury requirements, then clearly we have a serious problem on hand. That is as far as NSFAS is concerned. Then secondly, I also share a little bit of a concern with regards to SAQWA. I was not aware. We have the repeat offenders. I agree with Honourable Cassidy. Local government, CETA, just remains a headache. It's just one of those entities. I mean, some of these CETAs just move into administration and out and back in, and the next one is in and out. And can we really allow that? Because we have seen from the Finance and Fiscal Commission quite handsome amounts are being sort of available for spending to make a difference in the skills development sector. But if we must nanny, to use Honourable Bazzoli's word, if we must continue to nanny these institutions, we're not going to find the results. So what is it from the Auditor General and from the department side that must be done? I know that there's a review coming, but Chairperson, can we afford to wait any longer? Or should we as a committee, is it so serious in nature, if we look at the specific targets that are 100% not met, LGCETA, should we not move to a position where we hold them before the committee again during this process? And can they please direct us, the Auditor General, to say, what more can we do to keep them accountable? Thank you. Okay, Chairperson, but sorry, I didn't express myself correctly. Obviously, it's not a question of not being met. It's a question of, because you cannot manage a plan if you cannot clarify what you want to achieve. That is essentially what it is. Well, interesting questions that have been raised by the Honourable Members. I will now ask AXA to respond and also allow the department to top up.
Thank you, Chair. Quite challenging questions. Chair, perhaps I just need to take a step back and remind the members that this initiative by the AG to do a pre-review of the APPs of the department specifically was an attempt to make sure that before the year starts, a department has an APP and indicators that meet the SMART principle. The criticism was that we as the Auditor General of South Africa come right at the end and we indicate that the indicators do not meet the SMART principles, yet the department has gone throughout the year with these indicators that do not meet the SMART principles. So we said we'll be proactive in evaluating this, discussing the findings with the department and allowing them an opportunity to correct, and sharing these findings where they are not corrected with the portfolio committee, so that when the portfolio committee engages with the department, then you are aware of the issues that we will potentially raise if they are not corrected. And this also came as a result of noting that there isn't proper understanding, and obviously with these findings together with the National Treasury and DPME, the framework is modified and simplified so that departments and entities can then make sure that these entities meet the SMART principle. So these discussions are continuous. And I'm saying this because the members, you know, the issue of the root causes, what is it? What needs to be dealt with? Is it the skills? Is it support? What is needed? And I believe that at this point in time, the department would be in a better position to respond to the difficulties that are realized by these entities. But essentially, what we have picked up is that there isn't proper understanding within the entities of the requirements of National Treasury in terms of this framework. However, there is constant engagement with the entities around around the indicators. And National Treasury also engages with these entities to share and guide the entities on how to set their targets and for them to meet these SMART principles. And perhaps it's something that we need to dig further as we continue with our interim audits in auditing these entities in terms of this criteria. With regard to the countries that do what we do in terms of the support that we give to the departments and the entities, We haven't really done a benchmark, and I'm not in a position to respond to that. And can I request that I go and consult our research and development, who will probably share with me accurately, because they know they are the people that have done this research, and they will know how many countries and what type of countries do this type of thing to assist us to respond to this question. I think that's about what I can respond to, Chair. They are quite difficult questions, and I think the department and the entities will be in a position to respond to the challenges that they face and what should be done to them. As the AG, we have done what we ought to do, reporting to the portfolio committee to empower the portfolio committee to then take it forward.
Okay, it's just a follow-up question. The seven, it's a follow-up question. The seven out of 21 entities. Now, I don't know if you are able to explain it. I know you tried, but seven out of 21 entities, and you can see that the CITAS, these entities have not been doing well, and to us it will be very, very important that we have their APPs audited so that we start there, making sure that they all have quality APPs, and then we then follow up in terms of monitoring and evaluation of their work. So I think that follow-up question, if you can just, is it a follow-up?
Yes.
Okay, the follow-up by Honourable Member.
Chair, I just wanted to check from the auditor and the department Because my understanding is one section of the government must work with other section or one act of the government, just like we've got Performance Act, which is compulsory to all departments of government. And as you know, in performance, targets are set, objectives, indicators, and the scorecard is there. And in fact, I know with Johannesburg, they called a consultancy to come in and teach the whole staff complement of 30,000 in Johannesburg to come and teach them how to do a scorecard for individual and for the institution so that your performance ultimately is measured. And the whole layout is there of a scorecard and targets at the end. So I'm just asking because a new Performance Act made it compulsory for everybody to do performance, whether, according to the auditor, our entities are not subjected to this. Because if they are, then they are trained how to do it.
Any other follow-up? Honourable Member Mkulu.
Thank you, Chair. No, just an understanding. With some of the entities, there is a note where there is an asterisk to say this entity will do 1, 2, 3, and 4. But with others like NSFAS, which is also of great concern to us, there is nothing which has been noted to say what will be progress on the issues that have been raised on the APP.
Okay, over to you, Madam. Thank you, Chair.
With regard to the seven entities, Chair, combining it with the question up here, we definitely will do a follow-up, especially where we've indicated that there will be corrective action to make sure that the final APP is what, well, the findings that we have raised, the changes have been effected in the final APP. That we will definitely do. Where we didn't indicate the corrective action by the entities, there was no commitment, but obviously we do follow up because the intention is that when we do a review and we raise findings, corrections must be made. The intention is that what is tabled should be the corrected version of the APP. However, we cannot force the entities to make those changes, which means that if the changes are not made, as I indicated earlier when we started, these findings will then be raised in the final report. But the preference is that the APPs must be corrected. We normally have engagements, especially with these entities that are struggling, where we share with them the process that we follow in auditing performance indicators, and where we also, the criteria that we use when we audit performance information and reported achievements, how we audit this. So we normally have engagements with them on a yearly basis to discuss the criteria so that they know when they set their targets for the following year, not to repeat the mistakes of the past. However, we still struggle, but we do have those type of engagements. As the Honourable Member indicated, you know, the engagements to teach them on how to set the targets. And we link this with the criteria from National Treasury in terms of the framework on how to set these targets. So we have continuous engagements with the entities and the departments as well. And I believe that is why the department's one has improved. And perhaps from the department's monitoring and evaluation side, this is one area that they need to focus on and prioritize to make sure that the entities effect the knowledge that is there within the department as well, and sharing knowledge and quick wins as well.
Member Kasim?
Chair, I've just got one small request that if we can get some sort of a small report circulated just to inform us as a committee whether or not those changes were effected or not in the publication of the final APP.
Actually, what I would have loved to see is your report on them, ne, and those challenges, so that in our oversight function with them, we then ourselves satisfy ourselves, departing from those challenges and what has been done to address. To address those challenges. But all in all, as AXA, how many APPs of the entities have you seen? How many? I want us to be honest with one another here. Remember, some of us worked in the administration for too long, from 81 to 1999. How many have you seen? And if you can assist us and send us those challenges that you have identified, because I don't want us to leave this place thinking that you have seen, thinking or imagining, but we want to be factual. How many have you seen? And then can you at least circulate the report of those that you have seen, just indicating those deviations, because that's what we want to use so that there is a correction just where there are deviations.
Chair, just to make sure that I understand you clearly, when you say how many, for instance, the higher education portfolio has 90 odd entities, so you want to know how many of those entities have we reviewed their APPs? Is that what you want to know?
Yeah, actually, you know, my focus is on CETAs.
Okay, we've reviewed all the CETAs, the department, and entities. The only entities that we didn't look at is TVETs and universities. So we've reviewed all except for TVETs and universities. Yes.
Okay. But you have not reflected it here because it does not get transferred from the department. Am I right?
What, the CETAs?
The CETAs.
No, we have the CETAs in here. We have findings of the 7 CETAs. The rest, we are happy with their APPs.
Okay.
So we've only had... I apologize.
You came back so that I can also catch up on that one. Okay, no thanks then. Thank you very much. Otherwise, I think, yeah, we now have a clear understanding of the audited Department of Higher Education and Training and the entities' APPs. So we will be in a position to use this information in our oversight function tomorrow as we engage with the department. Is it a follow-up question, Mr. Kasim?
Chair, I just wanted to confirm that my request was...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sure.
Okay, you are allowed.
I have trust issues.
Just for the record, Chair, yes, we will do. We will give follow-up in terms of the corrections made.
I had trust issues. I take it that we trust one another. And we should have, that is what is going to strengthen our working relationship and also ensure that together, né, we achieve on our oversight function and quality, you know, oversight function. Thank you very much. We have come to the end of our briefings, and indeed we've had good discussions. I am satisfied, and I can see members are ready to engage the department constructively and meaningfully tomorrow. So the meeting tomorrow will be starting at 9:30 as usual, and then we will have other presentations, your NESFAS and SAQUA, in the afternoon, because there is no sitting. Agreed? Agreed. Thank you very much. The meeting between ourselves, there's an announcement. Okay. The meeting stands adjourned, but I really would like to consult with the committee members, ne, on the Friday program. In terms of our program of action, on Friday we are expected to also sit to receive briefings from your CHE and QCTO on Friday. So shall we then engage on that one? We are pressed with time. Remember, we've got two very important processes that we have unleashed, the lawmaking and this one. And this one has got time frames. Come the 21st, we will be debating this one. So we're trying to accommodate all these briefings before the debate so that members can debate also meaningfully, departing from an informed position. So shall we then discuss? Honourable Member Kasim, I hope you still trust me. And then Honourable Member, Honourable Member Keka.
Yeah, Chairperson, it's. I was very shocked when I saw the meeting scheduled. It's a bit strange. We have a registration weekend, so it's not an ordinary week. There's a final registration weekend on Saturday and Sunday, and there's no sit-ins this week. So therefore, I mean, if we are pressed for time, can't we just do this on Thursday morning and we just carry on? We can get back to our constituencies, and it's done. I don't imagine it will take very long. If we do it on Thursday morning, and then we can take flight straight after that.
Well, there's a proposal that instead of us sitting on Friday, shall we then shift this to Thursday? Honourable Member Kekana?
I second without any waste of time.
Kasim, you must try to control your tongue. I promise you, it's in the Bible. Control your tongue. You talk. Okay, no, that's fine. Are we all in agreement that we shift the Friday meeting to Thursday and you will all be available for that meeting? Yes, Honourable Member Killian?
I just have a challenge this week, Chairperson, because the rules, the subcommittee on the rules is having meetings scheduled for tomorrow, from tomorrow until Friday. So I will have to juggle my time, if you will just understand that. It's not as though I'm not at work.
Okay, your apology is understandable and accepted. Okay, thank you very much for your understandings. We will now shift to the Friday meeting to Thursday. And then the secretary will then circulate this and also inform our stakeholders. And what else?
Receive the progress report and sit on Friday on the elimination of the certification.